few things.
One of the things too that we thought might be helpful as we talk about like the Article 11 elements, our position on that is unchanged in that we believe that the system that currently exists, if followed correctly, provides all of the opportunities that I think that the teams have articulated would be needed to have a functional evaluation system in university. That's all of those opportunities that are beneficial currently exist in the CBA. But one of the things we wanted to mention too is that I know it just seems like it's our bargaining team here as well. But after every session, we communicate with 350 members of the unit. They are in constant conversation with them. The positions that we're representing here are not only our positions, but they're also representative of what we hear back from our constituents, our clients, just as you all go back and consult with your with the board, right? So they've overwhelmingly said to us that kind of initiatives that would, in their perception and in ours, would empower administrators to implement evaluation criteria outside of what's been established already in the CBA is not something that they would support. And so that's, as we're articulating that position, that's the position that's been articulated to us by the 350 or so members of our unit who have to ratify these things rather than just our individual opinions, as with all of the things that we're presenting.
Okay, we understand that.
On the non-discrimination language, Cassandra, you and Jay, maybe to answer this, because you had said that. So on the definition of harassment, is this definition, you said, is from the Florida, reflecting changes in the Florida statutes?
Which line?
This is on the front of 6.2C, where the definition of harassment.
It's changes in the law that have devolved, I guess, since I think the last time or one of the last times this was addressed, is that harassment, because we just say sexual harassment currently, but harassment can't be based on national origin or other things, and so that was why.
Right. So what I'm asking more specifically, so the language under the definition of harassment, right, as proposed, says conduct based on, not the protected class part, but the language that says that is sufficiently severe or pervasive so as to alter the terms and conditions of the individual's employment environment or substantially disrupt the individual's work or educational environment is a violation. Right. So our question, is that language reflected in either state statutes or federal law? Because that's where our concern is, right? Because Jamie, you mentioned a second ago, we don't want to implement standards and stuff like that or go beyond the requirements of the law, right? I have concerns in this language this language says it can be severe and pervasive as long as it's not sufficiently severe or pervasive, right? Or that they can harass as long as it doesn't disrupt the work or educational environment, right? It seems like it's potentially setting the definition bar of harassment higher than maybe what currently exists.
That's as I understand it to be from when, case law and things like that when they review, but I'll do another review.
So for our purposes, mm-hmm. The United States Supreme Court and the United States Court for the 11th Circuit, which is the court or appeals court in Atlanta for the state of Florida, has defined what constitutes actionable harassment.
Okay. Is that just,
which would be a violation of Title VII?
Okay.
So if someone, every time you defend a harassment case, mm-hmm. you get to a point where you can articulate the actual conduct that occurred, whether it's through depositions or sworn statements. And then you submit that to the court, and you say, the defense says, it doesn't meet this test. Mm-hmm. And the plaintiff's attorney would say, oh, it meets this test. Mm-hmm. And so there's a number of, there's hundreds of cases that apply this definition to a bunch of different scenarios.
Do you have that language in front of you by chance or accessible?
That's
what we would want to look at, right? What is that test or standard as defined by...
But it's not in the statute. It's case law, but it's how they define it. But it's
U.S. Supreme Court, right? It's federal.
Yeah.
So I think that's what we would want to look at just to make sure we're not exceeding that standard in our CBA language.
Right. So, yeah, that's why I used that example earlier, because the courts say it's possible but very unlikely that a single act can be sufficiently severe or pervasive.
And going past this, you know, there's a test that I'll say, I think I'm being harassed. And so the first thing is, like, well, is it based on a protected class? Mm-hmm. And then it's, you know, like, was it sufficiently severe or pervasive to affect my work environment? And then you also look at it on an objective scale to see, like, maybe I'm just being ultra-sensitive about whatever it may be, and the people at large wouldn't. So, like, the courts kind of go through that process, and they... Mm-hmm. So that's where that...
Well, absolutely. It's inescapable that that's going to be litigated in some way about... In those gray areas, right, of what constitutes harassment, right? We just want to make sure to do our, and we can look it up too, but do our due diligence to make sure that the language that we have here is reflective of the federal language. I just wanted to make sure and mention this here. So I'll send you all a Microsoft Word version of our grievance article if it's easier to have that language. After caucus, did you have any additional thoughts on what we've outlined here as a potential path forward on grievance?
No, not really. I think we understand it, and we're just going to have to bring it back and review it there.
Okay.
The university to see. But we understand what you're achieving with that.
In 6 and 9, we appreciate that the terms of those are narrowing. We'll consult with our constituents and provide a response on that, but we think that that's moving forward towards a narrower understanding of changes that we could introduce some beneficial ones into it. A couple of things, just kind of looking forward of items that you may want to start thinking about that we're considering bringing in. It's been a while since we've talked about one of our favorite subjects. I think it's been getting lonely. It's inventions and works. That article. One of the things that we've been just reviewing other articles about inventions and works and intellectual property. The UF inventions and works article seems like a pretty good model to work from.
I was just wondering, and I know that there's been kind of recent, I guess maybe it's a year or so old now, changes in the state law as far as intellectual property. So, as you review, I was just wondering how recent UF's was, because I haven't looked at it recently.
I don't know.
And I know a lot of the different universities have been trying to address because of the different shift in state law.
We may end up, because of some of those things, just postponing inventions and works till a further discussion, to a reopener or something like that. But I don't have an answer to that, quite how new
UF
it is. But what I like about the UF article is it addresses a lot of the concerns already that we've talked about at the table, and that they have a very kind of prescribed calculation percentages about like when grants are received, how, you know, who receives what amount, how much does the university get, that sort of stuff. I think they have a more updated understanding of like a definition of works, right, and a more taking into consideration technological advances and that kind of stuff. I think they do a good job of addressing concerns about was it university investment? What's the phrase, Kim? Do you remember? It's a significant university like investment.
Yeah, is that a term
like related also to like online classes right. and those things? So we think that there could be some language maybe to pull from there directly rather than to try and invent from whole cloth. So that was one of the things that we were just kind of looking at. Although it may be a scenario where we wait till reopener to address that more fully. Another issue that we were looking at is something that's been brought to our attention from faculty that I think could use attention in bargaining is our dissertations, theses, etc. Specifically right now in our EDD program, we have, my understanding, something like 200 dissertations that they're just basically waiting in the tunnel to get through to completion. So there's kind of a two issues to look at in that. One, and this may need to be done through consultation rather than negotiation, but one is like we would be flexible. Like if the university wanted to provide some faculty with work assignments in which they're just focusing on trying to get those dissertations finished, right, to kind of basically unclog the logjam on that, kind of looking at potentially some work assignments in that specific scenario, and then kind of going forward, University of North Florida, Mike, you might have negotiated this. I think they have some pretty good language about how to provide compensation for things like dissertations, thesis, that are not overload. They're not extra compensation. They're part of the work assignment, but they're done disproportionately across a department or across the university, right? So it's language that says, like, you know, if someone directs five dissertations or however many, right, over a certain amount of time, then they would, on completion of that, they would earn a course release in their upcoming assignment, right? It's that kind of thing. So I think there could be that would be a good process, I think, to address both of those elements to try and hopefully okay. resolve some of those issues.
Okay.
So rather than, in our experience, hopefully what brings about a good result is to kind of talk about the issues first rather than to kind of rewrite the whole thing first. But we might bring in just those examples of articles to look at a review before writing them on our own. I think, was there anything else? Can you guys, other things that... I think that's about all we have for now, except for just maybe signing up on some dates. Looking forward.
Yeah, and March turns out to be kind of a difficult month because of spring break.
Spring breaks. Mm. Yeah.
We can just negotiate all spring break.
I am not on spring break, so
you need to negotiate that into your Alan Norton and Blue contract.
I know.
Yeah.
So the first date, the only dates in March that were available is the afternoon of the 30th or any time on the 31st.
Okay.
Because there's a bog, there's a bot, there's and there's a spring break in March.
That's fine. I know in the past when we've had like kind of. I know you're not proposing a back-to-back date, but I know when we've had back-to-back dates in the past, it can be beneficial sometimes if, like, you guys are presenting things and we can give you a quick turnaround on the next day. The opposite scenario hasn't been that productive where your team usually needs more time to consult with the board of trustees and stuff. So are you proposing just one of those dates? Is that your preference?
That was what we're doing this time.
Why don't we do the 30? It's up to you guys. Well, I can do either of those times. Do you have a preference?
The 30th is better for me. The 31st, I teach in the morning.
Okay, so let's do the 30th then in the
okay.
afternoon.
Good.
I get done with teaching about 1 o'clock. Or so.
All right. Good.
What specific time though on the 30th?
What time is
we did 2 last time.
2 o'clock, would that work?
Yeah, that's right. Okay.
You'll get a notice. Find a spot. I'm just carrying on finding a spot.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
I have to say, that's pretty good timing. I've got 12-on-1 exactly.